Hello, everyone, and welcome to the sixth episode of the Neil Before Zod podcast. My name is Lee Klontz. I'm in Atlanta.
And I'm Adam Levine in Los Angeles.
Adam, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. You ready to talk tonight?
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited.
All right. So we're going to talk tonight about the Jack Ryan movie lineup. We're going to talk about backwards compatibility in video gaming and about the Olympics. So let's get started.
Okay. So, Lee, Jack's back. Of course, I'm talking about Jack Ryan. Amazon came out and said they are developing a new Jack Ryan series that's going to star John Krasinski from The Office. And if you watched it, 13 hours. They haven't officially picked it up to series, but my guess is when they attach a name like that, it's just a question of when. It's possible they may do one of their deals where they put a pilot up and then wait and see how people respond, but I would think that's a strong enough property that it's almost assuredly going to be a series. So here's my first question. Are you excited? Do you want more Jack Ryan in your life?
I'm gonna turn the question around on you.
Of course.
Do you buy Krasinski as a tough guy?
No, although I didn't see 13 hours. I recall reading that he like buffed up, butched up, bearded up. You know, he was like a tough soldier fighting, you know, fighting the Benghazi thing. So maybe. I don't know. I mean, it happens, right? You see guys who seem like they're funny guys and can turn into action guys. It's possible.
Yeah, I wonder if he is able to escape the kind of typecasting from The Office. I mean, because he really was such a great and memorable character on The Office. It's hard for me, and I know that's not fair to him as an actor, but I have a really hard time seeing him as anyone but kind of a likable everyman kind of doofus. I mean, when I saw him on the poster for 13 hours, it doesn't look right to me, you know. All props to the guy. He totally did all the things you have to do to look like a movie poster tough guy. He's got the full on beard. I don't know. I have kind of a hard time with him. But you know, to answer the question though, the deal with Jack Ryan to me is that, you know, the character isn't consistent from movie to movie. He's not consistent right. In tone. He's not consistent in age. So I am starting to feel like maybe he's just one of those characters you're meant to just kind of project onto. He's kind of like Mad Max, maybe, or, you know, one of these characters that is kind of whoever the story needs him to be. And I will totally watch it. I don't know that I've seen an Amazon show with the budget that I would kind of hope for in a Jack Ryan story. I mean, even The Man in the High Castle, which is probably of the Amazon shows I've seen the highest budgeted one, you know, they cut a lot of corners. I mean, it's not, they did a lot with a little there. And so I don't know how many kind of helicopter or submarine action sequences we're going to get, But sure, I'll give it a shot. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on the action element. I'm sure they'll have a couple big set pieces, but there's going to be a lot of like sitting around being smart and analyzing the data and that sort of thing. And I don't know, maybe Krasinski can bring some comedic flair to the role. You know, it's like you said, that character is hardly set in stone. It's not to say that he couldn't be a smartass, right? Or funny as he, you know, wields his intellect.
No, you're right. And I mean, if you look at, you know, Alec Baldwin or Harrison Ford, you know, they didn't bring a whole lot of fun to the role. I mean, he was a pretty serious guy, but maybe this is a kind of a new start. I do wonder. I mean, I'm not a big Tom Clancy book reader. I think if you played the Dead or Alive game with most people, they wouldn't know if Tom Clancy is actually even alive anymore. I don't think he is. Is that right?
I think he is dead, but I think he's dead. I could easily be wrong.
I think he had a book come out pretty recently. I mean, I think he's just become kind of a brand more than anything else, a video game brand and a brand of author and a brand of kind of a certain style of book. I don't know how much any of that matters anymore. There's clearly not an authoritative take on the Jack Ryan character, and so I guess they can do whatever they want to. It's kind of weird that he's Jack Ryan, because I don't know that Jack Ryan means much to anybody. but you know, because he is such a mishmash of character traits and time frames, but you know, maybe they think of him like kind of a James Bond for the kind of American intelligence set, as opposed to a British spy, and he can just be whatever they need, and that's cool too. I'll certainly go along with it.
I'm sure that's what they're hoping for. I bet they'd be a lot happier, frankly, if Jason Bourne had been better received, just in terms of that genre. You know, obviously Jack Ryan is not Jason Bourne, but you know, they're still coming from, in theory, a more serious intellectual spy thriller.
The funny thing about those movies and that character is that, you know, he is you know, he's not a superhero, but he is definitely, you know, it's funny because he's not usually the most intelligent guy in the room. He's not the strongest guy in the room. He's certainly intelligent and he's certainly strong, but it seems like his kind of defining trait is kind of cunningness, I guess, or more kind of ability to work his way out of a dangerous situation in a way that most people wouldn't. And that's kind of interesting. I mean, maybe that's kind of a uniquely American thing. I mean, he's not always super suave. He's not always, you know, able to outpunch everybody, but he's kind of able to figure out a plan when everyone else is panicking. And maybe that's his kind of defining characteristic. And maybe if they can tap into that, I think that could be a lot of fun.
It's like you said, there's no clear vision of Jack Ryan. And I think this is a good opportunity to talk about the movies that have come before it. So, right, the first time we saw this character, it was played by Alec Baldwin in The Hunt for Red October, which is like 1990. Then 2 years later, for some reason, they didn't keep him on and they brought in Harrison Ford for Patriot Games, and then Clear and Present Danger. And then they remade it again with Ben Affleck. And then they remade it again with, what was it called? Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, with Chris Pine, you know, Captain Kirk, you know, Jack of All Trades. So, yeah, no one's really kind of locked it in and said, this is Jack Ryan. So there is that opportunity here. And obviously those movies all had very different levels of success. And that was actually one of the questions I wanted to ask you. How do you rank those five films?
So I have to confess, I have not seen Shadow Recruit. I heard it was pretty mediocre, and so I actually never saw it. I'm not the biggest Chris Pine fan. You know, and it's funny. It's not because of anything he's done. It's not his fault. It's not him. It's me. He has this kind of a blankness about him that I just find not terribly exciting. You know, yeah. He works fine, I think, as Captain Kirk. I think, in fact, he's a very appealing Captain Kirk. I don't dislike him really in anything he's done. He's just not one of those actors that sells me on a movie. So I haven't seen Shadow Recruit, I think.
Yes.
So I haven't seen that one. You know, for me, The Hunt for Red October is like one of those evergreen, I'll watch it on TBS on a Saturday afternoon, cut up with commercials. I'll throw the DVD in sometimes. I will watch it if I'm scrolling through on-demand movies and it happens to be there, I will watch it compulsively. It's one of my absolute favorite movies. I love that movie so much. And I don't know if it's the time it came out or, I mean, the fact that John McTiernan made Die Hard and The Hunt for Red October makes him in some ways, you know, a director for the ages, even though he hasn't really made anything else of that caliber.
What? You're forgetting his masterwork, The 13th Warrior. You know I was going to say that. I love that movie.
I knew. You know, you're not the only friend I have who loves The 13th Warrior. I have to confess, I've not seen The 13th Warrior.
You've never seen it?
No, oh, dude, I haven't. Dude. It's
you need to, you know, I'll give you a pass. You said you were going to watch Shadow Recruit. You didn't. I don't care. That movie's rubbish, but you should give The 13th Warrior a go. That's a fun action film. Antonio Banderas, yeah. Omar Sharif, a cast of a bunch of random European people. It's good. See, it's a good story. It's well done. It is.
I have another friend who talks about the movie in the same tone. So I guess I do need to watch it. I don't know why I wasn't interested. I guess because it was like the time frame or something. I will watch it, I promise. But you know, the two Harrison Ford movies kind of blend together for me. I think they're both fine. I liked them when they came out, but I don't think either of them is necessarily much better than the other. And I actually thought that the Ben Affleck movie was kind of okay. I thought that it was a bit cavalier about the kind of the nuking of an American like football stadium. That was kind of like haunting in a way that I kind of didn't really like expect out of a kind of a summer blockbustery kind of movie. But you know, I mean, I've said before on previous episodes, I think Ben Affleck is really appealing as an actor. You know, it, in the same way that like I won't go see a movie because Chris Pine is in it. I will not go see a movie because, you know, but he just doesn't draw me to a movie. Ben Affleck usually says to me, this is probably a movie that warrants some attention. And I know he's easy to hate on, but I find myself unable to hate on the guy. You know, for me, Hunt for Red October is one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time. I love it so much. And the fact that the novel is basically note for note the movie, it kind of means that, you know, I have a portable copy of the movie on my Kindle that I can open anytime. So I've done that too. I love that movie so much. What about you? Where do you fall?
Hard to not put Hunt for Red October at the top of the list. That said, I find Patriot Games extremely watchable in the same way. Whenever that's on, I'll leave it on. You know, it's Sean Bean's the bad guy and it's kind of a fun tale. It's, you know, it's a bit, it's plenty absurd in the same ways that all the films are, but I liked Harrison Ford a lot in that role. I liked him the most out of all the guys who played it thus far, but it's also Harrison Ford. I mean, when is he not likable in a role he plays? So I have it, you know, Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, Clear and Present. You know, basically, I'm reading my list. I have them in the order they were released, starting for Hunt. You know, that was my favorite, and there was a slight degrading on down the line.
That's kind of sad, right? I mean, like, you would like to think that I don't know, that a series that's gone on that long and has been through that much reinvention, they would eventually do something better than the one previous. That degradation is not a good trend, especially for Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like you said, The Hunt for Red October is like one of the just like great action films. And that film is just so ridiculously quotable too, right? I mean, there's like 20 awesome lines that you hear people kind of drop, you know, in normal conversation. And very few movies achieve that.
Well, and it's so tight as a movie. Like it really flows in a way that it's funny because I really do credit McTiernan because it reminds me in a lot of ways of Die Hard, where kind of every scene seems necessary and every character is, even the minor characters are well drawn enough that you know who they are. And I mean, it's not easy to shoot an interesting kind of fun action movie on a submarine. It's a very, you know, it's a very monotonous looking world, but they did a great job with that movie. And it just, it's brilliant. I mean, the script is great. The cast is great. I mean, you know, the fact that you have Sean Connery playing a Russian, you know, a naval captain is insane, right? That shouldn't work. And yet it's awesome, even though his accent is kind of ridiculous. It's just the whole thing is so good. So, so good.
Ryan, some things in here don't react well to bullets. Now, that's pretty brutal. But
that's pretty, so, pretty good.
His accent's a little brutal, as you note.
I mean, that's the thing. It's no worse than his actual accent. But, you know, I actually kind of I would totally have seen the Marco Ramius sequel. But luckily they never they should have chose him to build a franchise on. Maybe they would have had better luck. Yeah, I like the Harrison Ford movies well enough. But they're movies that I am almost never interested in watching again. And I think that says something. I mean, like I think they're perfectly fine, but they feel very dated. Whereas Hunt for Red October, I feel like you could watch that movie anytime and it's still exciting. The other movies feel kind of, I don't know, they feel like kind of stuck in their like 90s oeuvre. And it's just, I don't know. I don't like them nearly as much.
Yeah. Well, I believe this new series is supposed to be set in current day. So I'm sure we'll see plenty of technology, internet, smart tracking, you know, big government kind of stuff in there.
Yeah, which screws up the kind of the actor timeline even more, you know, because I don't know if Chris Pine is, he's probably younger than Alec Baldwin was when they made the 1990 movie. So it's like it's a weird.
Yeah, it's a Benjamin Button thing with the character.
It is. It is. Pretty soon it'll be like a baby with a pistol. And I'd watch that movie too, actually. Baby with a
shaking
pistol.
Shaking his rattle. Give me my rattle.
Exactly. So, I mean, I guess there's something to be said for whether or not all these, you know, reboots are really necessary. Like, why can't Amazon just make an action series with somebody new? But I think if you're going to turn any character into some kind of general action hero, you know, fill in the blank, then Jack Ryan's as good as any, because he's really a no one anyway.
Right. Well,
although in the books he became president, which is even more bonkers. But luckily they didn't try to go down that route. I think that would have been
that's Kiefer Sutherland now. He's going to be the president.
Perfect.
Jack Bauer to president. Can't wait for that one.
This year I think I would actually vote for him. So,
yeah, given the choices, I don't know that I disagree with you.
So it's one of the great secrets that I'm going to let you in on. The Olympics has started. I'm not sure if you've heard or seen anything on the telly, but
is that the event sponsored by Audi with the rings?
Congratulations! Yes, it's the one that wants you to drink a lot of Coke, apparently. So the Olympics are in full sway. We're in the midst of swimming events right now as we're recording this, and gymnastics. Are you an Olympics watcher? I should say by background that we actually met while working at a sports website some years back, many years ago. So we do have some history with this kind of topic. But what do you think? Are you into it this year?
Well, I'm trying to remember. Were you at CNNSI during the Nagano Games in 98?
No, I came the year after.
That was like a gigantic nightmare of overnight shifts. I've always loved the Olympics. Ever since I was a kid, probably the 84 Games is when I really picked up on it. That summer we were in Canada visiting my grandparents, and I was just bored out of my mind, and it was the only thing on TV there. You know, getting to watch those games, that was the great Olympics for Carl Lewis, Greg Louganis, and the Russians were doing their revenge boycott for our boycott of the 80 games in Moscow. And I was really into it. And I think ever since then, I've always looked forward to the Olympics. Summer more so than winter, but I still get up for the winter games.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I'm not a kind of a huge sports fan, like, you know, month by month. It's just, it's a lot of time. It's very time consuming, but I do get caught up in, you know, every 2 years in the Olympic fervor. And I'm, you know, the winter games are always kind of interesting just for their kind of novelty and weirdness. And then the summer games are kind of what I feel like are kind of iconic Olympics. Those are the Olympics I remember kind of being interested in as a kid, the Olympic events as a kid. So yeah, no, I'm definitely like spending every night for 4 hours on my butt watching, you know, watching people swim around a pool, which is, I mean, it's been great. I think it's been a really, really fun year so far.
So here's my big question for you, and this is a bit of a loaded question. How are you taking it in? Are you watching this nightly NBC primetime tape delay bullshit, or are you watching things live on the internet, or are you watching some of the other, I don't know, we have like 6 to 8 channels here that are showing, you know, all sorts of more team events, but at least most of that's live.
So I am actually, that was a very leading question. And I am actually probably the prime audience for the bullshit, because I am very happy to have the produced, kind of Hollywood ready presentation. I don't care if it's live. I'm not like spending the day tracking who's ahead and, you know, who won. So usually I'm unspoiled. And, you know, honestly, even if I get spoiled, I'll still watch. I'm not like I don't get like super upset about it, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's just entertainment. But I kind of like it. I like the structure rather than just the events. I'm totally willing to be like, you know, led down the trail with the sappy little video and the family, and he gets up every day at, you know, 3:30 in the morning, and they, you know, spend 4 hours doing laps in the dirty pool. I'm totally down for that, and I'll watch that all day. So for me, it's I'm all about kind of just having myself led by the heartstrings. Are you more of a live event person?
100%. I want that raw live uncut shit. Just I want to shoot that into my veins and roll with it. I hate those pre-cut packages, the sob stories, all that. You know, I'm sure these people have interesting stories, but I want to see them compete. I want to see the best of the best in the world, in theory, competing in their events, and I want to see it live whenever possible. The other, I don't know, maybe 3 days ago, when Leidecki and Phelps won their first gold medals, the NBC national final 3 or 4 hour cluster started, and they actually had the opportunity to go to both of these things and show them live, and they didn't. You know, they could have said, "Hey, we just came on the air, but Leidecki's about to swim for her gold, her first gold," and Phelps was like, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes after that, and I just was sitting there going, "My God, what are you doing?" So the good news is NBC has an app, and if you sign up for it, you can sign up for alerts, and the alerts will say, "Hey, Michael Phelps is about to swim, you know, in the breaststroke 200 meter final. Click here." And if you've set it up, you can watch it live on a stream. And usually what I've been doing is just using like Apple TV and just throwing it up on the big TV. But it's kind of sad that you have to go through that amount of trouble. And I'm sure there's plenty of people who don't have either the technical savvy or the patience to do that. And so then they're forced to watch these events hours later.
Yeah.
Another example last night when the women's gymnastic team won the all around team competition, that didn't wrap up here. I don't know exactly how they're shifting it East Coast to West Coast. That didn't wrap up till a quarter till midnight.
Yep.
And, you know, that shit had happened like 10 hours ago. That doesn't fly with me.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, you know, it's probably more of a statement on kind of how I view sports and how you view sports. Like for me, I'm purely there to be entertained. Like there's barely a difference for me between a sports movie, a sports video game, and actual sports. I actually don't really care so much. So I'm purely there to be emotionally manipulated and to be kind of, you know, led to the point of despair and then pulled back by the power of the narrative and I'm totally cool with having them like take those few hours and like weave it into a storyline and, you know, oh, you know, here's who you're going to hate and here's who you're going to cheer for and, you know, and then consume it that way. Cause I'm not tracking it throughout the day and I don't really want to. I want the manipulation. I want the dopamine, you know, that's all I care about.
I think you kind of struck the key difference between us. All my sports consumption is live. And sports is, frankly, the only TV where I tolerate commercials because it's live, you know?
Absolutely. And you have no shortage of them this year. There is an insane number of commercials on the Olympics this year. But I'm not sure that's not always been the case. But it feels like, and maybe it's because advertisers just feel like they've, in most cases, lost the ability to advertise in the traditional way. And so when they know they've got you at the Olympics, they're going to just pummel you to death with the same messaging over and over. But I've been acutely aware of how many commercials are in the Olympics this year, and it's mind-boggling. Insane.
I think my mom actually has it figured out, which is kind of funny since she's about as technically savvy as a banana, but she's basically treating it like normal television, and she's recording the blocks and watching it the next day.
Yeah,
that's smart because she's skipping the commercials. She doesn't care if she hears who won, but she'll get to see the stuff she wants to see and scan through the rest. I can't process doing sports that way, but it's actually really smart when you think about it.
See, for me, even like if I'm going to watch, it's the same way with the events themselves. Like if you're going to give me commercials, like bring me your A game, give me your most emotionally manipulative pitch to sell me a Coke or to sell me a car or to sell me a movie. And it's just like, you know, that's like my drug, you know, my drug of choice is the dopamine. Yours, it sounds like, is more the adrenaline. And maybe that's, you know, says a lot about us, but like, I want the kind of the, oh man, you know, like the, and then you're like, hey, and you're excited or the sad, give me the sob story, man. I love it. I just eat that stuff up. I love the kid who, you know, nobody saw coming and then he had a dream and blah, 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 blah. I live for that stuff. I love it.
It's sad and pathetic, but I get where you're coming from. I was going to ask you what are your favorite sports in the summer games?
So I haven't really hit my real pace yet. I really like the track and field events. You know, I mean, obviously, I think the marathon is the most interesting event because that's kind of what I do on myself. And so seeing people at like their absolute peak doing that event is just unreal. The pace and the intensity they're able to maintain for, you know, two and 3 hours. The swimming events I'm a little done with. I find them really exciting and they're short and super cool. There's a lot of them and they're starting to feel kind of samey because all the same people keep winning. Fortunately, a lot of Americans, which is great. But gymnastics, I haven't gotten into this year. Usually I really am a sucker for the, you know, kind of learning the personalities of all the, I hate to say girls, but, you know, most of them are, you know, very young teenagers, most of the girls. And I haven't really been too into gymnastics this year. But yeah, then there's like the weird events, the run walk, or I'm sorry, the race walk is the one that I'm really kind of interested in watching this year because I was just reading about the rules and I hadn't really paid much attention to that event before. But there's all these kind of funky rules about, you know, kind of your gait and you have to keep a foot on the ground, and you have to keep your front leg straight until it's under you. And I'm like, well, that's kind of wacky. So I'll probably tune into that one as well. How about you? What are your favorites?
Well, certainly none of the shit you just mentioned. I will say, to your credit, the marathon is like the most Olympic of Olympic events that you could possibly have an interest in. I can't fathom sitting around for 2.5 hours watching people run through, you know, the very scenic city streets of Rio, but if that's even where the track is. I've always, you know, I'm a big fan of like net sports. Like, I really love volleyball. I love the team indoor game. I love the sand volleyball. I love the ping pong. Oh, by the way, have you seen the outdoor sand volleyball stadium they built right on the water there?
It's super cool.
It's crazy. That thing at certain parts of it must go like 30, 40 seats high. I've never seen anything that looks more like a miniature football stadium in my life. It is
an amazing. Yeah, it's amazing looking.
I assume that structure is going to stay up. You know, obviously volleyball is incredibly popular in Brazil, but I was like, dang, that's how you do it.
Yeah. No, the beach volleyball is a great event too. I've been watching quite a bit of that as well. And it, you know, not just for the, you know, the lady factor, I mean, which is, you know, not insignificant, but I mean, it's a really exciting event to watch. And, you know, I like the speed and the intensity of it as well.
Does your wife know you're a pervert?
She probably better by now than anyone. She knows, right? She's kind of figured that out. You know, I mean, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, when you're watching the Olympics, there's plenty of eye candy on both sides of the couch. Yeah, so it's all good.
The story they made out of that, that guy from wherever it was, Tonga, who came out in the oil was just, yes. That was like embarrassing how far that whole thing went.
I did see one tweet that made me laugh. That was when they started shooting the confetti everywhere. It was expressing some sympathy for the guy from Tonga who would never get all that confetti off of his oiled frame, which is probably true.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he had help if he needed it from the ladies.
No doubt.
Here's a question for you: if you could remove an event or two, what would you take out?
You're not going to like my answer very much. I actually find Olympic basketball very unexciting because I feel like the U.S. is just too good. And I feel like when I'm watching Olympic basketball, it just feels like basketball. Like, it doesn't feel special. I mean, the thing I like about the Olympics is you get to see sports televised that you almost never get to see televised. And basketball is something that, you know, we're saturated with. And so I find it very unexciting to watch. I mean, it's great to see, you know, some of the best players in the world, but frankly, a lot of the teams are terrible. And so it's the sport that I will kind of ignore. I don't know that that's my definitive answer, but it's the one that came to mind first. How about you?
Well, let me just ask a follow-up on that. Would you be sure, more interested in basketball if they went ahead and capped the age limit, right? So let's say they said no country could send any players over the age of 22. so that at least it wouldn't be, you know, an NBA All-Star team. There'd be some NBA players on there, but there would have to be more college-aged players on the squad.
See, here's the thing for me. I think that when you watch an NBA game, I feel like you're already seeing the best players in the world play basketball. Even when it's, like, not a very good NBA team, it's, like, still, like, the level of talent in the NBA is so high that I don't feel like when I'm watching an Olympic basketball event that I'm really seeing, like, necessarily the best players in the world. I'm so saturated with basketball on TV throughout the rest of the year that I just don't really care that much about Olympic basketball. So it's not even, as I think about it, so much the pro versus amateur aspect of it as it is just that, you know, I don't need any more basketball. I'd much rather watch events that I don't normally get to see. And, you know, that's really most Olympic events. I mean, there's very little track and field on television. There's very little swimming on television. And so I find those kind of interesting, if for nothing else, for their novelty.
I actually enjoy the basketball, although I find myself being really judgy. You know, when I think if we're going to represent a sport and our country's going to represent that sport in the Olympics, we should send the best of the best. So I start to get kind of annoyed when players start backing out, you know, like, oh, I've had a long season, or I don't want to deal with the Zika, you know, whatever. You know, we sent a team. Our squad is really good, but it doesn't have two of the best players in the league in Curry and LeBron. And it's like, that's kind of lame. I mean, they're still going to win. You know, they've mauled a lot of their opponents so far. I'm sure they'll be in some closer games, but there's no way they're not going to win. But I don't have a problem with that, frankly. I think we should win. It's not like if this were the World Cup, you know, and any other country wouldn't send their best players. It's how it ought to be done.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. It's really has much more to do with just the oversaturation of basketball in, you know, on TV.
Fair enough. Okay, though, so to answer the question, I'm going to go with dressage. I just don't understand how that's an Olympic thing at all.
Very fair point.
And here's a little thing. I had to look this up because I wasn't sure. You know, golf is one of the sports this year. They're just playing a tournament individuals, no team play. I was kind of wondering, does the caddy get a medal? And it turns out they don't. So, you know, it's you know, I suppose if you win the gold medal, maybe you'll throw more money to your caddy. But I don't know. I thought that was kind of lame. You know, at the end of the day, the golfer is making the shots. But I would imagine if you asked any caddy, any golfer, how important his caddy is, or her caddy, it's probably a pretty big deal. Like, you could argue that they should get some kind of a medal too.
You would think so, yeah. Although maybe they need their own event, you know.
Yeah, that's
Olympic
right.
Caddy.
Maybe they should be that. Maybe that's the answer. The caddy should be judged individually for a medal.
I like that idea. Yeah, dressage is bizarre, and
it's so lame. It's barely worth talking about. So, okay, so I also read that the IOC just approved 5 new sports, sort of new, for the Tokyo Games in 2020. And I guess the way that works now is once a city is picked, the host city gets to then recommend sports for the IOC to approve or not approve. So the sports that they're adding, and I was, you know, guffawing over new or not, is they're bringing back baseball and softball, which I think is really good. They're going to add karate, which I think
is great.
You know, if they have judo, why not that? And then they're going to, new sports are going to be surfing, skateboarding, and sports climbing. I'm not entirely sure how in-depth that is, but I think all of that sounds really interesting to me.
Is that like rock wall climbing?
It's not clear to me whether it's going to be like a fabricated wall or they're going to go to like local climbing sites and say, all right, here you go. First one up, this wins.
It's kind of interesting. I mean,
I would watch that.
Totally. Yeah. That's definitely a real show of skill and strength. And I don't know how they score it, but if it's, I'm sure they've got some scheme in mind. I bet that'd be really great. I think surfing is an odd one. I would totally watch it. It kind of feels like California Games, you know, I'm back on the old Commodore. But again, I'm sure, you know, there are surfing competitions. I'm sure they have ways of scoring that are fair. It's just, you know, how do you control, like, for waves and such? I can't even begin to imagine, but I'm sure they'll have a way. I'll definitely watch.
Well, yeah, I mean, all that's been worked out. Professional surfing already has a circuit and a system, you know, so there is, I'm sure, a little bit of luck about, you know, what wave you catch, but ultimately you're scored on how you sustain that and the control and, you know, all that stuff. So the scoring system is, I'm sure, pretty easy to figure out.
See, that's where your West Coast upbringing gives you a background that I just don't have.
Hang ten, yo.
Yo.
So the other thing that sort of popped in my head, you know, as I was looking at what's being competed now and these new sports they're adding, what sports do you think should be added to the Olympics?
Oh, wow. Gosh. That is a really hard question to answer.
I'll tell you what. I'll give you some time to think about it, and I'll give you my answer since I had a bit more time to process. Okay?
Sure. Go for it.
So here's my list. Bowling, darts, pool, racquetball, and frisbee. And I haven't decided whether team or golf frisbee would be it, but, and you know, there's a bit of a theme there. Some of those are considered bar games, but I don't see how any of those are technically all that far off the beaten path of what events are being competed now in some form or another.
No. And it's, those are actually really great thoughts. I mean, they're, as you were saying that, I'm like, wow, these are like all like, you know, what you traditionally think of as, very non, I guess, non-traditional, non-athletic events as much as they are skill games, but there's nothing wrong with that. And we have lots of shooting events and, yeah, I would totally watch bowling and darts. That'd be actually really cool.
Boom. I'm running the IOC now. Let's have it.
Dude, man, you need to get some of that sweet, sweet payoff money.
That's true. That's how it rolls. I could turn my new sport passion into like a $1 billion house in the south of France.
Nice.
So, you got anything?
Yeah. Wow. You know, like I am. Everything I think of is. No, I honestly, I can't really think of anything that isn't already there. There are so many events already that there's nothing kind of coming to mind. I love your thoughts, but I don't have anything new.
Okay. No shame. No shame in having no game.
you can edit my non-answer out if you need to, because that's
Well, I asked the questions and now I really can't.
So one of the things that spawned this podcast was looking back on debates we've had over the years. And one of the ones that we used to have in the office that we've had many times since is the necessity, the utility, the worthwhileness of backwards compatibility in game consoles. And, you know, Microsoft has recently rolled out backwards compatibility for the Xbox One with a bunch of 360 games. The 360 had kind of a pretty half-assed backwards compatibility with original Xbox games. Nintendo has traditionally kind of given you backwards compatibility for a single generation. I am a backwards compatibility booster. I know you've traditionally been a skeptic, and maybe you could tell me why and if the changes for the Xbox One have won you over.
Well, you know, yes, I'm the living contradiction. I love retro gaming, right? I'll play NES, SNES, N64, GameCube, all of that till the cows come home, but I never find myself wanting to play the previous generation. So here we are on the Xbox One, the PS4, the Wii U, and I don't want any part of PS3 games or Xbox 360 games or, you know, Wii games. And furthermore, there's this trend now to remaster. So like, the really good games are getting remastered anyway, like the Uncharted collection or the Master Chief collection. I'm okay with that stuff where they actually put a little bit of effort into it, but I don't know. I just don't find myself wanting to play games from that just one generation removed. I'll probably be more interested in playing those games 5-10 years down the road, but not right now. To me, it's just it lights up the differences are just too severe. You're like, you see how great the graphics are playing Halo 5, like, do you want to go and play, you know, Reach on your 360? Why?
So for you, is it that have you actually played anything on the Xbox One PC yet, or no?
Yeah, I played a couple games because I just kind of wanted to see if they had cleaned up the interface. Because as you said before, I think right when one of the first things I played was like the I got that rare collection, mm-hmm. and the way it made you like load up the operating system when that first came out for the Xbox, and some of those were our Xbox original Xbox games, and some were Xbox 360 versions. But I found it clunky. Whatever, that didn't bother me. I don't know. I just it just doesn't. It, I don't see the appeal there.
Yeah. See, I think for me, it's, you know, when a console finishes its life, it's typically when some of its best games are coming out, and you know, I'm almost always and a fairly early adopter. Although, to be honest, I have not purchased a PS4 yet. I've been kind of waiting for the next kind of version of it before I invest. And honestly, I have such a backlog of games now. I can't really, you know, make a good argument for even buying another console anytime soon. But you know, it's I always feel like when you adopt early, you tend to get these kind of, you know, kind of crummy first wave of games. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, Rise and that kind of thing, which are more kind of tech demos and they are really good games. And at the same time, they're like the best games on the previous generation coming out, and you kind of miss it. Once a new console comes out, I rarely fire up the old one. And that's just, I don't know why. It's not like it, you know, it devalues itself. It's like you said, it just doesn't feel like the new fun tech anymore. So I have to say I've kind of been enjoying it. They actually did for the most part, a pretty great job on, you know, getting frame rates buckled down, in some cases improved. They've been pushing out some pretty solid titles. Red Dead Redemption came out a couple weeks ago, and I've been enjoying going through that again. I finished Black Ops on backwards compatibility, and it's. I think they did it right this time. I think maybe part of it for me is, you know, I have been most of my life, my gaming life, a PC gamer, and PCs don't really have generational jumps like that. You know, it's, you can run games in the PC from pretty much whatever you want, as long as the APIs for the operating system haven't changed significantly. And, you know, for the most part, they do a pretty good job of keeping them functional. So it's very weird for me that, like, there's these lines in the sand where suddenly, you know, certain games are on one side and certain games are on the other. And, you know, I like the ability to be able to play either, if I can.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. See, here's the thing, though. At the end of the day, if I wanted to play any of those games, why not just play it on my Xbox 360, which is sitting up in my closet in a box, right? I've got all those games. I've got the Xbox 360. I could hook it up to my TV. Like, why go through the hassle then of, you know, sure, I could sell that, and that could be the argument you make, but I tend to hold on to the last generation console.
Oh, for sure.
I always have. So then it just becomes even more sort of pointless to me in that context where I always have that system. And the reality is, like, I don't want to play that system. That's why I have the new system. I don't know.
See, I don't like, if I can avoid it, I don't like having six consoles under my, you know, under my TV with, you know, the receiver, this kind of complicated combination of inputs, and, you know, by, you know, you, the what's plugged into what input and what's, you know, what connects to what. And it's like, I like the ability to, wherever possible, kind of consolidate those down. I actually still do have my 360 hooked up, but it's nice to kind of, you know, do everything on a single platform. I like some of the media features of the Xbox and the, you know, the ability to swap between TV and games, and kind of getting that functionality on top of games that are still very good. I mean, Red Dead Redemption is like, man, you know, I was kind of wondering, it's a 6-year-old game, but that game still really holds up. That game's really tight. And to see it kind of just working as if it was a new game is kind of exciting. The remaster thing, you're right. I think that, I think in some ways, some of the pricing models are a little off for them, although I think the Uncharted collection was pretty fair. And even like something like The Last of Us, they dropped in price pretty quick. I don't really want to pay full price again for the same game with, you know, higher FPS and a higher resolution. But you know, it's I hate to see these games get lost because they're in that kind of that dip in between generations. And I think that can happen sometimes.
Sure. I guess what I've always wanted to see happen, and maybe the technology just is never there or the product is never there, I've always wanted a really cool handheld that played last generation games. You know, like, can you imagine if you had a handheld and you could play Xbox 360 games on it? Like, that would be dope. I would be all over reinvesting in my library and those games in that context. But I feel like they've had their time on the big screen and that time has passed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the you know, it's funny. I do kind of wonder. I think there's a topic probably for somewhere down the road on handhelds and whether we'll ever see something as ambitious as the Vita again, because it seemed like that's what they were trying to do in some ways with the Vita, is kind of put a PS3 class game experience in your hands, and kind of it didn't work very well. You know, it could have been a marketing thing. It could have been whatever. I think there's so much. For instance, my kids, right? We went to see the new Ghostbusters movie last week. The Ghostbusters, we were talking about kind of the difference between Ghostbusters, you know, the old Ghostbusters and new Ghostbusters. And I mentioned, like, yeah, there's a Ghostbusters game that was kind of like a quasi, like, sequel to the movies. And they want to play it. And I happen to have it. And it's like, you know, it's a non-VC game. You know, it makes me glad I've got that console still hooked up, because that's still a perfectly fun, good game. They don't care. I mean, for them, it's, you know, it's brand new. I think there's just so much, especially when you look at like the PS3 and 360 generation, there were so many games and so many really great games, and they were around for such a long time that I'm kind of glad to see them getting some additional life and, you know, selfishly to get some additional value out of the kind of embarrassingly large collection of games I have.
Well, sure. But that's yet another criticism that you just brought up, is backwards compatibility always has limitations, right? You know, they're doling out the games. I don't know how they're determining what games are suitable or approved. And, you know, I'm sure there's licensing deals there. But ultimately, when you can't just like guaranteed go, okay, I want to play this game BC, then it's just kind of a crap experience, like the moment you hit that wall. And I could think of I'm sure several games that I'd be interested in maybe firing up that I'm guaranteeing aren't available.
Chrome Hounds,
Vanquish, you know, I'm sure, I'm just kind of blanking, but stuff that I played a lot.
Yeah.
You know, Mech Assault, stuff like that. There's no way that stuff's BC.
See, for me, it's more like it's stuff that I was like, ooh, hey, you know, it's buy two, get one free. I guess I'll get this game. And then I've got this game sitting on my shelf and I was like, God, I never even like put it in the console. And like, you know, or like games that I abandoned, like Red Dead Redemption, I abandoned Black Ops 1, I abandoned. You know, it's kind of fun to be able to go back and pull your saves out of the cloud and continue. I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle the Scorpio next year, which supposedly will not even be backwards compatible in as much as it will be just like compatible. You know, it will just be like the Xbox One games will just kind of carry forward in a very PC like way. They'll just kind of continue to work. It won't be like you're running some kind of compatibility layer. They'll just be functional games, just like the new Scorpio games are going to be. So I think that that's probably a good direction to go in, or at least it sounds good to me, because I hate every generation. I have a huge box, as I'm sure you do as well, of OG Xbox, original Xbox games and GameCube games. And it's just sad. I can't play them, you know, and probably never will again. And it would be great to trot out Mech Assault or, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, something from that generation that I play Knights of the Old Republic and give it another spin, but it's kind of hard to do now. It's a pain in the ass. They didn't even have HDMI, you know, so.
Well, it sounds like what you need to trot out is like a splitter so you can just play these things off the original consoles.
Yeah, I need a tube TV too, apparently, so.
Well, yeah, if you want to play Duck Hunt.
But yeah, I'm really hoping that we're moving toward this notion of like you buy a game and then you like you own the game, you know, like I think another good example is, you know, Skyrim is coming out with Bethesda's coming out with a remastered Skyrim for Xbox One and PS4, just to take advantage of, you know, all the bug fixes over the years and improve resolutions and color gamut and that kind of thing. But it's going to be free on the PC, because for the PC, it's kind of like it's considered a patched version of the game, but they're reselling it on the consoles as a whole new game. Well, I bought Skyrim twice. I have it on PC and Xbox 360. So it's kind of, again, it's kind of undermining that that notion, or it's underscoring, I guess, that notion that the PC gaming is more of a investment in a library, whereas when you buy on a console, you're kind of at the whims of whatever they're going to let you play, whatever they're licensing to play. So,
well, when somebody figures that out and it's not like ripping the consumer to pieces, then I'll give it my seal of approval, but I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, fair point.
All right, that's it for this episode. As always, please follow us on Twitter at Zod Podcast, and you can now follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Zod Podcast, and please subscribe to the pod on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Lee, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Adam, always a pleasure. Take care, man.
Catch you on the flip side, buddy.
See you soon.